Imagine hiring a world-class, absolute genius mathematician to solve 100 complex equations for you.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Right, but there is a catch. Before they are allowed to solve every single equation, you basically force them to go all the way back to kindergarten, sit in a tiny little chair, and, relearn how to add one plus one.
Oh, wow. That sounds excruciating.
It is. You make them rebuild their entire understanding of mathematics from scratch 100 separate times. You would never do that, right? I mean, it's completely absurd.
Yeah, you'd fire whoever came up with that process.
Exactly. Yet that incredibly wasteful process is exactly what happens every single time you type a prompt into modern artificial intelligence today.
It really is.
Every single query forces these massive systems to completely rebuild their thought process, which, requires just an astronomical amount of energy.
Yeah.
We're talking about server farms that draw enough power to light up small cities.
It's a huge problem.
So welcome to the deep dive. Today we are tearing into a set of technical notes titled Chat Multichannel AI Efficiency.txt.
Right. And it is a fascinating document.
It really is. Our mission today is to explore this radical architectural framework proposed in these notes. It's called World Compute AI, along with its underlying mechanism, which the author calls conditional collapse theory, or CCT.
Which is quite a mouthful, but the concepts are incredible.
Yeah, the promise here is just massive. It's a way to process millions of prompts simultaneously while actually shrinking the energy footprint. And the hardware required to run it shrinks too. Plus, we might just solve the infamous AI black box problem along the way.
Yeah, the author of this document is essentially proposing a complete teardown of the fundamental way machines process language.
A total paradigm shift.
Exactly. We are moving away from the industry standard, which is known as token prediction, and stepping into this wild new concept called semantic manifold navigation.
Semantic manifold navigation, okay.
Right. And the claims here, they completely challenge the core scaling laws of hardware. I mean, if this math holds up, it could allow hyper-intelligent AI models to run on like an 8 GB local GPU.
Wait, really? Like the kind of graphics card you might find in a standard gaming laptop.
Exactly that kind, running locally while processing millions of concurrent channels.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because that sounds like literal science fiction based on how power-hungry AI currently is.
I know, it really does.
To understand how we get to this, hyper-efficient future, we need to look at why our current setup is so flawed. So, if standard AI is like hiring a chef who insists on building a brand new kitchen for every single meal they cook, how does the machine actually handle that right now? Like when a tech giant wants to process 100 prompts from 100 different users.
Well, the industry currently relies on something called standard batch inference.
Okay.
And the term batching, it makes it sound like baking a dozen cookies on a single tray in one oven.
Yeah, that's what I would assume, like doing it all at once efficiently.
Right, but mechanically, that is entirely wrong. In standard large language models, batching actually means running a number of independent forward passes through the exact same neural network weights.
Oh, so they aren't sharing the work at all.
Not at all. Taking your 100 prompts, the AI's core intelligence, the massive matrix of logic and language comprehension is basically duplicated and recomputed 100 separate times in total isolation.
Wow. So they're running at the same time, but they're totally blind to each other.
Exactly. And that is the core inefficiency right there. The system's short-term memory simply cannot handle the duplication.
Because it's trying to hold 100 different thought processes at once.
Yes. There is a specific component called the KV cache or key value cache.
The KV cache.
Think of this as the notepad where the AI keeps track of the context of your specific conversation.
Like if I ask it to write a story, the KV cache remembers the characters I introduced in paragraph one so it can reference them in paragraph four.
Precisely. Now, under standard batching, because the system is running 100 isolated rebuilds of its intelligence, it also has to maintain 100 massive bloated KV caches.
Ah, I see. And the text points out that this causes a massive bottleneck. It hits what they call a hard VRAM ceiling at around 128,000 tokens.
Yep.
So let's translate that for you listening at home. VRAM is video RAM, right?
Yeah, video RAM is the incredibly fast short-term memory, located directly on the graphics card, the GPU.
Okay.
It is basically the physical desk space the AI uses to do its active thinking. So when the KV cache explodes because it's managing all these separate bloated contexts,
that desk space fills up instantly.
Instantly. The compute requirement scales linearly. So if you double the prompts, you exactly double the computational work and the memory required.
Which perfectly explains why these big tech companies are out there trying to secure nuclear power plants to run their next generation data centers.
It really does. And the document captures this perfectly with one specific phrase. It says, batch inference is currently just parallelized repetition.
Parallelized repetition. That is perfectly put.
Right. Standard architecture treats intelligence as a transient, fleeting process. It, like, flickers into existence solely to answer your prompt, creates this tangled, overlapping mess of computations, and then it just vanishes.
Okay, let's unpack this transient thing, because if the AI already basically knows how to speak and reason, why does it have to reload that entire understanding of the universe for every single prompt? Isn't that like an adult relearning the alphabet every time they write an email?
It's exactly like that. It's incredibly frustrating, and that exact inefficiency is what conditional collapse theory, or CCT, aims to cure.
And it does this by completely redefining what intelligence actually is to the machine, right?
Yeah, exactly. The text lays out a core axiom for this whole thing. The axiom is intelligence is a shared state, not a per-query computation.
Okay, intelligence is a shared state.
Right. Setting up that axiom is basically the foundation of world compute AI. CCT proposes dividing the AI's operation into two distinct mathematical components.
Which are?
The stationary component and the probability component.
Let's break those down, starting with the stationary component. The math in the notes represents this as a vector S. So this is the base intelligence.
Yes. The stationary component is the logic, the world knowledge, and the reasoning machinery. And under CCT, this component is fixed.
Meaning it doesn't get rebuilt.
Right. It does not get rebuilt for every prompt. Instead, it is maintained by a single shared mechanism called an ODE solver, which stands for Ordinary Differential Equation Solver.
Okay, wait. You are going to have to translate that for
me. Fair enough.
Because Ordinary Differential Equation Solver sounds like a terrifying college textbook.
Yeah.
How does that actually work in plain English?
Well, an ODE solver is basically a mathematical tool used to calculate how a system changes continuously over time.
Okay, continuously.
Yeah. Imagine the physics engine in a massive multiplayer video game.
Oh, like World of Warcraft or something.
Exactly. The physics engine, you know, gravity, wind, the collision rules, it runs continuously on the server as one stable environment.
Right. It updates globally for everyone playing.
Exactly. It doesn't boot up a separate, isolated gravity engine for every single player who logs in. That would crash the server immediately.
Ah, okay. So the ODE solver does this for the AI's semantic coherence.
Yes. It maintains the world model as one stable, continuous engine that evolves once per time step. And it does this regardless of whether there is one user asking a question or a million.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. We have our stable physics engine of knowledge. That's the first part. Then we have the second part, the probability component.
Right, the probability component, which represents the actual POMs coming in from the users.
And how is that represented?
The author refers to this as the entropy gradient, or delta I. And this is where the paradigm truly shifts.
How so?
Because the intelligence is already running as a stationary state, your prompt does not trigger a full recomputation anymore.
It doesn't need to rebuild the kitchen.
Exactly. Your prompt acts as a low-dimensional projection. The text calls them probe vectors.
Probe vectors. Okay, I love the visualization this brings up. Let me try an analogy on you.
No, go for it.
Imagine the AI's intelligence, that stationary component we just talked about, is a massive, sprawling library in total darkness.
I like it.
Instead of forcing builders to construct the entire library from scratch every time a reader wants a book, the library just sits there. It is stationary.
Right.
The prompts, the questions you ask the AI, are just visitors walking into that dark library holding flashlights. And those flashlights are the probe vectors.
That's a great way to put it.
They aren't building the shelves or writing the books. They're merely navigating the space. They're just illuminating only the specific pathways they need to, you know, collapse their specific question into an answer.
Yes. The library is the shared manifold, and the flashlights are the parallel collapse trajectories.
Parallel collapse trajectories.
Right. So the energy cost is paid up front to maintain the dark library once. After that, you are just letting millions of people walk around with flashlights, which requires almost zero energy by comparison.
And that is elegant. But this raises a major logistical red flag for me.
Oh, what's that?
Well, if we have millions of people running around a shared library in the dark with flashlights, how do they not collide? Ah,
the collision problem.
Yeah. If my prompt is asking for a chocolate chip cookie recipe, and your prompt is asking the AI to debug a Python script, how does the single shared state not get its wires crossed?
It's a crucial question. And the source document actually tackles that collision problem with a very specific internal architecture.
Okay, what do they do?
It introduces two modules to manage the traffic, the Super Boolean Router and the Entropy Gated Pruner.
The Super Boolean Router. Let's look at that one first. How is this acting as the traffic cop?
So the text describes the Super Boolean Router as holding 16 logical paths in superposition.
Superposition. Yeah, quantum mechanics.
Exactly like that. In quantum mechanics, superposition means a system exists in multiple states simultaneously until it is observed or measured.
Okay, but how does that apply to AI language models?
In this architecture, it means the shared intelligence holds all of its high-level semantic categories like math, poetry, coding, history, open and accessible at the exact same time.
So how does my flashlight know which path to illuminate without blinding the other people in the library?
Well, when your probe vector enters the router, it doesn't force its way through every single pathway. It only measures the specific logical dimensions that are relevant to its semantic coordinates.
Can you give an example?
Sure. If you ask for a poem, your vector's mathematical signature naturally aligns with the poetry pathways. And because it only measures those specific paths, the math pathways simply remain unobserved by your probe.
Oh, I see. They don't collapse.
Right. They don't collapse. Mm. Your prompt navigates right past them without interfering at all with the user who is currently asking a math question.
It's selective illumination.
Yeah.
That is brilliant. So that handles the routing and the collisions.
Yeah.
But how does this system know when a prompt is actually finished? Because in that standard batching model we discussed earlier, we are stuck waiting for the longest, most complex question to finish before the machine clears its memory, right?
Yeah, that's the bottleneck. And that is exactly where the second module, the entropy-gated pruner, comes into play.
The entropy-gated pruner.
Okay.
This module tracks what the author calls the entropy collapse potential, which is mathematically noted as delta H sub I.
Okay, let me stop you there for a second. We need to define entropy in this context because I think most people, you know, associate entropy with chaos or physical disorder.
Right, like a messy room getting messier. Mm-hmm. But in information theory, entropy is actually a measure of uncertainty.
Uncertainty.
Yeah. So when you first submit a prompt, the system's entropy for your specific query is very high because the answer is completely unknown.
Right.
But as your probe vector navigates the manifold, basically, as your flashlight finds the right section of the library, it gathers information.
And as it gathers information, the uncertainty drops. Exactly. The entropy collapses.
So that delta H sub I is just tracking how fast my uncertainty is dropping to zero.
Precisely. The entropy-gated pruner constantly monitors the gradient of that uncertainty. It watches the math to see the exact moment a prompt is solved.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Because this leads to what the text calls asynchronous collapse, which just fundamentally changes the whole concept of latency.
It really does.
Think about standard batching, like a fast food drive-thru with only one lane. You just want black coffee, but you are stuck behind a minivan ordering custom, complicated meals for 12 different people.
The worst feeling.
Right. You cannot leave until the minivan is done. But with this entropy-gated pruner, the AI operates like a drive-thru with an infinite number of lanes and, like, smart sensors.
Yes.
If your prompt is simple, if your entropy drops to zero quickly, you are instantly routed out of the manifold, you get your response immediately, and your prompt just stops consuming compute.
Yeah. The technical term used in the notes is entropy-gated early exit.
Entropy-gated early exit.
Right. The moment the collapse threshold is met, the prompt exits, it assembles its response, and the system instantly frees up those micro-resources.
While the complex prompts just keep going.
Exactly. The complex ones simply continue navigating the shared manifold without holding anyone else hostage.
Which brings us to the ultimate payoff of this deep dive.
The hardware scaling.
Yes. So what does this all mean? If we are stripping away the redundant forward passes, sharing a single global state, and actively kicking out fast queries the millisecond they're solved, what does this actually do to the physical power grid and the hardware requirements?
It changes everything. The source actually outlines a table comparing the energy and GPU scaling laws of standard models against World Compute AI.
Okay, let's hear the number.
The numbers completely invert our current understanding of compute costs. Let's look at FLOP's first floating point operations, which is the actual heavy mathematical lifting the processor does.
Right, and under the standard model, the FLOPs are constant per prompt. Every prompt costs the same massive amount of math.
Right. But under CCT, the text states that FLOPs per prompt decay as 1 over n, where n is the number of concurrent prompts.
Wait, decay?
Yeah.
Are you saying that the more people use the system, the cheaper it gets to process each individual person? Why would it decay?
Because the heavy mathematical lifting running the OD solver to maintain that massive dark library is a fixed cost.
Oh.
Yeah, you pay for it once per time step. The marginal computational cost of adding one more flashlight, one more probe vector, is virtually nothing.
That is insane.
It is. So as the number of prompts approaches infinity, the total compute cost flattens out, approaching the baseline cost of just running the shared state.
That is wild. But what about the memory? We talked earlier about the VRAM, the disk space, hitting that hard ceiling of 128,000 tokens because the KV cache explodes quadratically.
Right. Well, under CCT, VRAM usage is dictated by a completely different formula. It's O of D plus N log N.
Okay, let me stop you again. We promise to translate the math. What does that big O notation actually mean for the physical graphics card sitting in the server?
Sure. So D is the shared stationary state, a library itself.
Okay.
That is a massive number, obviously. But it is constant. It never grows, no matter how many users there are.
Got it. And the second part?
The second part, n log n, represents the memory footprint of the flashlights.
The individual prompts.
Yes. Because the flashlights are just lightweight probe vectors that exit early, their memory requirement grows at a tiny, almost flat logarithmic rate. It completely eliminates the quadratic memory explosion.
So the memory requirement basically flattens out to just the size of the base library, plus a tiny, tiny fraction of a fraction for each active user.
Exactly. Which means the bottleneck completely shifts.
Because right now, AI companies run out of VRAM long before they run out of actual processing power, right?
Exactly. They have these massive chips sitting idle because there isn't enough memory to feed them data fast enough. But World Compute AI claims to solve this. Because the memory footprint per prompt is so tiny, we can finally unleash the tensor cores.
And tensor cores are the specialized sections of modern computer chips designed explicitly for the complex matrix math AI uses.
Yes, and right now, they are starved by the memory bottleneck. CCT removes the bottleneck entirely, allowing millions of channels to be distributed across those tensor cores simultaneously.
The roadmap the author lays out to achieve this is incredibly aggressive.
Oh, it really is.
In phase four, they outline a goal to deploy this framework on an 8 gigabyte GPU, scaling to 10,000 concurrent probes. Let's just ground that in reality for a second. An 8 gigabyte GPU is a graphics card sitting in the average gaming laptop right now.
Yep.
And phase five pushes this to millions of channels via asynchronous collapse scheduling.
The direct quote from the source states, "Millions of prompts can be processed with the VRAM and compute footprint of a few dozen traditional queries."
A few dozen.
Yeah. A single local GPU runs the shared trajectory while n number of probes collapse in parallel.
This is huge for you listening, because this means massive hyperintelligent models don't need to be locked away in billion-dollar liquid-cooled server farms drawing power from the local grid.
No, they don't.
They could run locally. On the edge, a single consumer-grade desktop could theoretically handle a whole city's worth of queries simultaneously.
The implications for democratizing access to high-level intelligence are profound. It shifts the barrier to entry from brute force physical infrastructure to just, you know, elegant mathematical routing.
It's incredible. So let's synthesize the journey we've taken through these notes today. We started with the fatal flaw of modern AI, the redundant, energy-wasting, parallelized repetition, where the system forces a total re-education of its neural network for every single question. Then we explored the solution, conditional collapse theory. By treating intelligence as a shared, continuous engine, our dark library, and using probe vectors to navigate it, World Compute AI proves mathematically that we can process millions of queries simultaneously. Through super Boolean routing to avoid collisions, and entropy-gated early exits to kick out solved queries, we achieve sublinear energy scaling. We pay for the intelligence once, and we use it millions of times.
It's a beautiful system, And, you know, as we wrap up, I really want to circle back to the very beginning of our conversation when you brought up the black box problem.
Oh, right, the transparency issue.
Yeah, the text highlights explainability as a major natural byproduct of this entire architecture.
Because earlier we said the standard method creates a tangled web of overlapping math that dissolves the moment the prompt is answered.
Right. But under CCT, the AI's response does not come from an untraceable web. It actually traces back to a specific measurable collapse path.
Okay, so because your probe vector only measured specific logical dimensions in the super Boolean router, we can actually see the work. We
Exactly.
can track the exact footprints the flashlight left in the library.
We can see exactly which semantic coordinates were measured, and we can monitor the exact gradient of how the entropy collapsed. This makes the system profoundly transparent. We can finally understand the why behind the machine's output, which makes AI significantly safer to deploy in critical sectors like, you know, medicine or law.
It's a complete paradigm shift, moving from brute force to elegant navigation.
Truly.
Well, as we close out this deep dive, I want to leave you all with a final, slightly philosophical thought inspired by this text.
Oh, I like where this is going.
If conditional collapse theory is fundamentally correct, it implies that intelligence isn't an active process of calculating the next word. It is a stationary mathematical state waiting to be probed.
Right.
So, if that's true, does that mean the AI's ultimate knowledge manifold exists independently in the dark, entirely on its own? When you type a prompt into a machine built this way, are we actively generating intelligence in that moment, or are we simply casting a flashlight onto a vast intelligence that was already sitting there in the dark, just waiting for human curiosity to collapse its uncertainty?